As the United States continues to reckon with its legacy of white supremacy, calls to remove statues of Confederate and colonial leaders are growing louder. And some of those calls include some unexpected voices.
It's been a really interesting journey to get to this point. However, as time has worn on, there has been an impression upon so many of us, myself included, that the conversation and the story needs to be told honestly, and ultimately the story that we've always been told needs to change to a more correct historical light.
That's the Reverend Robert W. Lee, the great-great-great-nephew of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, and he, as well as Lucian Truscott, the sixth-generation great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson, both recently wrote op-eds advocating for their ancestors' memorials to be taken down. So I got a chance to speak with both of them. And I asked Reverend Lee how he got to the point of reckoning while being a descendant of a Confederate general.
I wanted to be a pastor, which is what I am now. And so when it was time for me to go through confirmation classes to join the church that I was a part of, I had a woman of color as my confirmation mentor. And when I mentioned to her that I had a Confederate flag and that I, you know, had mementos of Robert E. Lee, she said, "Honey, you've got to take that stuff down if you want to be a minister." And I can remember those words to this day, because for me it was a moment of reckoning, one that I hadn't fully grappled with until that point. And so my parents, of course, they let me form my own opinions. They, of course, weren't as gung-ho about the mentality of the South, but they liked that I was supportive of history. And so when I took it down, it wasn't that big of a deal, but as the conversation has evolved and I've grown a more public voice, they have been concerned not so much for me speaking out, but for the fact that the townspeople might not be too happy with it. All that's to say is that the conversation is necessary and it's ongoing.
Lucian, what about you? What were you taught about Thomas Jefferson growing up?
Well, the first thing I was taught by my mother and father was, just because you're the grandson of Jefferson doesn't make you better than anybody else. And if I was in a history class in grade school or something and they started talking about the founding fathers, my mother and father said, "Don't you dare raise your hand and say you're related to Thomas Jefferson. You just sit there. You're just a regular kid like everybody else." And, you know, that's the way I was brought up. You know, in the family, I had an upbringing that was very intimate with Jefferson and Monticello. I was, you know, we played in Monticello. You're talking to probably one of the few people that's ever played on Thomas Jefferson's bed. But the whole thing about Thomas Jefferson, nobody ever mentioned anything about slavery or him owning slaves or the fact that Monticello had been built by slaves. And I wasn't taught that in school. I wasn't taught it in college. I don't think anybody was. We didn't learn that the Capitol of the United States or the White House was built by slaves in school. But that all changed when I read Fawn Brody's book back in the 70s. And then in the 90s, when the DNA evidence came down that proved basically that Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson had six children together. That's what changed things for me.
And that legacy is something that's often talked about in different ways, Lucian, as I'm sure, as far as Sally Hemings is concerned. Often she has been referred to as Thomas Jefferson's lover, but that in and of itself, the language used there is not entirely accurate. I mean, this is something, there's a power differential there. She was essentially his property. And how did that learning about Sally Hemings, learning about her descendants, learning about the 175 slaves that Jefferson owned at Monticello, when you found out or understood the truth of your history, what effect did that have on you?
I think it was the first time that Thomas Jefferson was taken down about 10 notches from being a kind of a god to being just a man. The kinds of flaws and moral failings and hypocrisies and so forth that everybody else has. And I don't think we can ever know what Thomas Jefferson's relationship was with Sally Hemings. They're inside the Hemings family, which is where the controversy really lives and resides. There are really mixed stories about that come through their oral histories. But the fact is, they were together for 36 years, and they had six children. And I think you can tell some things about what their relationship was by the fact that the day that Thomas Jefferson died on July the 4th, 1826, the only two people at his bedside were my fifth great-grandmother, Martha Jefferson, his daughter, and Sally Hemings. That's a very complex story, but and now Jefferson's history is much more complex than it was. But my life personally has become much richer and fuller, getting to know all my Hemings cousins and going to family reunions with them and all the things that have happened since then.
Robert, we are in a moment right now where the imagery and the statues that we've had up in this country for years and years and years are now, not just now, but have been contested for quite some time. You have been outspoken, Robert, about removing statues of Robert E. Lee since 2017 after the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, after the removal or the proposed removal of a General Lee statue led to the death of counter-protester Heather Heyer. And after you spoke publicly about that, you then resigned from your church because of the controversy. Where do you stand today? Are you receiving similar pressure from your current church not to speak about this, or does this time feel different?
You know, I think this time feels different. I can honestly say that the groundswell of support, but there's also criticism, to be fair. You've got to be acknowledge that, too. But the groundswell of support has been overwhelming to acknowledge the past for what it is and to look to a future that is filled with more equitable and more just a society for everyone. You know, I serve a wonderful church now and I'm in a much better situation than I was originally. But all that's to say that it takes a sense of community to make this happen. To have these deep and difficult conversations about statues, because for some people they really do value the bronze and the stone and the brass that go into these realities. But for me, it's become clear that we have to address them if we want to be faithful to the intent of the flawed intent of our founding fathers, but however the intent that we believe that this country can be.
Lucian, to that point, you wrote an op-ed for the New York Times recently, and the headline here was, quote, "I'm a direct descendant of Thomas Jefferson. Take down his memorial." Why do you call for that, Lucian?
Well, I think that, number one, I think that Thomas Jefferson and his legacy, the best parts of his legacy don't live at that memorial in Washington, D.C., they live in our minds, and they live on the document of the Declaration of Independence and in the Bill of Rights and in the First Amendment that he and Madison together wrote. And Jefferson's legacy also lives at the University of Virginia, he founded, and at the United States Military Academy, where I went, that he founded in 1802. And I think also that that as a memorial to Jefferson, Monticello is so much better of a memorial because it shows his life in full. Now, finally, since the year 2000, Monticello has begun to embrace slave history there. And last year they opened an exhibit that shows Sally Hemings' room where she lived with her brother Peter Hemings. And if you go on a tour of Monticello now, you learn all about the slaves that built the place, and you see the joinery that Sally's brother John did, and the furniture that he made are pointed out to you, and you get a sense of Jefferson as a complete person, and not just this god that's depicted in a 19-foot tall statue. And the other reason is that I think that it's time to, I think we've spent enough time honoring and kind of worshiping these founding fathers, and it's time to honor some of this country's founding mothers. And I suggested that one founding mother that we could honor in place of Jefferson would be Harriet Tubman, who grew up as a slave, escaped slavery, helped run the Underground Railroad, and freed slaves, and then fought for the Union against the Confederacy as a scout, as an armed scout during the war, and then fought for the rights of freed African Americans during Reconstruction. I mean, she helped to form a more perfect Union, as the Declaration says, after slavery. And that's just as important to the founding of our nation as the years during which the Revolutionary War was fought and the Constitutional Convention happened. We don't just have founding fathers. We have founding mothers, and we should pay attention.
Lucian, one of the conversations we're having here on this show is also related to the way we learn history in this country. And in your New York Times op-ed, under the headline, it says, quote, "Monticello is shrine enough for a man who wrote that all men are created equal and yet never did much to make those words come true." I'm wondering how much of this history has been whitewashed so far. We know that, as you're saying, Sally Hemings, understanding her relationship, or Harriet Tubman, all of these figures, all of these mothers, but also just the promise. You said Thomas Jefferson lives in our heads, but the promise of equality, it's 2020, and we still haven't reached that point.
No, we haven't, and we have a long way to go, I think. And I think part of the ways that you get there is by taking down statues that venerate people like Robert E. Lee, who commanded an army against his own country, against the United States of America, and taking down the statue of Thomas Jefferson, who really didn't do anything to end slavery. And in fact, the only slaves that he freed when he died in his will were Hemings family members, some of whom were related to him because they were his children. So, we haven't learned enough about this, what I call the hidden history of the United States. I think Monticello is going a long way now to teaching that history and teaching it correctly. But I think a lot more has to be learned. And part of the ways that I think that we learn it is by tossing aside the what we might call the old history, the whitewashed history that we've had staring us in the face for so long.
Robert, why do you think that Robert E. Lee and more broadly the Confederacy still resonates with so many people? Why are people so reluctant to not only remove statues, but even so far up as the President of the United States, are calling this a question of culture, of American culture that's being erased, if you will? Why is there such a reluctance to confront Confederacy for what it really was?
Well, I think what can be said is the South may have lost the war, but they won in the history books and their ability to tell the narrative that we all grew up with, many of us, whether we were from the South or not. We have this image of General Lee. We have this image of a lost cause that once you get that in your head, it's very hard to lose it because you don't want to see your heroes fall. And I think, it's very interesting to hear about Jefferson and kind of the godlike stature in the family and seeing that fall, because that happened to me too. What's also interesting is that you have two descendants of people who helped literally found this nation. From Lee, an ancestor of Robert E. Lee, Richard Henry Lee, signing the Lee Resolution, which enabled the Declaration of Independence to be signed. And then, of course, with Jefferson, the architect of the Declaration of Independence, you have two people on your show who are clear that the history that we have been told as members of the family, but more broadly as citizens of these United States, clear that the history that we have been told is not always the most honest history. And to your point about the president, I think it's important to remember that the president may be calling this unpatriotic, but I think it's deeply patriotic and deeply concerned for our nation to call out the ills that we see and hope for a better world.
Lucian, I'm curious about your thoughts on that, because again, the president has invoked the idea of culture here, and we talked a little bit about history, but I'm curious your thoughts on just this idea that we are erasing American history, American heritage, American culture?
Well, you don't erase history simply by taking down a statue. I mean, Jefferson's, I don't know how many biographies have been written about Robert E. Lee and Thomas Jefferson. Probably between the two men, probably well over 1,000 have. All of those books still exist. The history is, this is why I say that the legacies and histories are really in our heads, and the way that we look back on our history and the way we look back on these men. And I think that it's time to tell the real history. We're not erasing history by taking down Jefferson's statue or Lee's statue. It's a chance at that point to tell the real history, to tell the history of Thomas Jefferson as a slave owner, and the history of him as a person, as we said in the New York Times, who really didn't do much to foster the equality that he wrote about so eloquently in the Declaration of Independence. You know, the thing that gets me about this whole lost cause business and everything that we're talking about is, I think that a lot of it is going on because the South fought a war and lost it. They lost the war. They don't want the history told that they lost that war.
They lost that war, Lucian, a very long time ago.
Yeah, they did.
Why are folks still holding on to that?
We don't have slavery anymore in this country. That's the great legacy of the Civil War. Why they're hanging on to it, I really can't get inside people's heads that are racist. I really can't. I wasn't raised that way. I'm not that way. I've never really understood it, except as some sort of terminal inferiority complex or something, to have to think that as a race that you're better than someone else. You know, I owe a lot to my mother for telling me, listen, you're not better than anybody else. And when she said that, she didn't mean just because I was descended from Jefferson. She said she meant that because she was telling me I wasn't better than the black kid in my class, or the Asian kid in my class, or during the time that I was growing up in the 50s, we always had kids that were polio victims. In every class I ever had, I had disabled kids in the room with me, and they were discriminated against more than anybody. And my mother used to say, you're not better than anybody. You're not better than them. You know, just you remember that. Well, I have remembered it, and I've lived my life on that basis. You know, I was raised to be the white descendant of Jefferson that took his black cousins to Monticello. I was raised to be the Jefferson descendant that called for taking down his memorial in Washington, D.C. That's who I am. And I owe that, who I am, to my mother and father, and to my grandparents, and to my great-grandmother and my great-aunts, all these people that came from him.
We are in a moment right now of racial reckoning with racism in this country, and the fact that the ultimate promise of the United States in terms of equality has never been fulfilled in this country, and it has had long-lasting implications, both in terms of healthcare, in terms of overall well-being, in terms of police brutality, and all of the things that we are seeing being challenged right now across this country. Lucian, as you and Rob, I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this. As you look around today, what is something that needs to be done right now for white Americans for their own reckoning with what's happened in this country? In other words, what can white Americans do right now, or what should be done to understand and reckon with where we are today?
Well, you know, one of the things that we can do is stop all this idolatry of the people that dishonored the flag of the United States, dishonored their oath to the Constitution, and fought against the Union in defense of slavery. And I think that we can, you know, there has to be a reckoning with history. You know, we owe an enormous amount to slaves that helped build this country. That story has to be told, and it has to be understood in order for this whole racism thing to be dealt with. You know, the background of racism is white supremacy, that somehow one race of people, white people, are better than black people, and that's such a lie. Yeah, even Jefferson himself, in his lifetime, learned how much of a lie that was. He wrote the seminal document of white supremacy with Notes on the State of Virginia in the 1700s. And he wrote that blacks were inferior to whites and that they couldn't be educated. Well, he had six children with a slave. He taught his children, his black children, how to read and write. Sally's brothers and Sally herself, probably, but we know that her brothers, Peter and John, knew how to read and write. He sent Peter to the Cordon Bleu in Paris. He wrote letters back and forth with John Hemings over the design of Poplar Grove and furniture in Monticello. We know all these things, and Jefferson himself learned those things. We have to teach history that reflects that and shows that in order for people to understand how wrong the racism is that still exists.
Robert, your thoughts on that?
You know, this may sound a little counterintuitive, but I just want white people in general to have enough hope. And what I mean by that is I hope they have enough hope to believe that they can change. You know, for so long, the story and the narrative has been that we, and I'll echo, you know, we were superior. But that time has passed, and we need not hold on to it. Because if we hold on to it, we're holding on to a lie. And then we make it into an idolatry of white supremacy and of racism, and that can't stand anymore. The world is changing. The country is changing. And for me, that's something that gives me hope. You know, the fact that the representation is changing and the way we think about who represents us is changing, that gives me hope. Because ultimately, the story of the United States has been that we come together and try to be a more perfect union. And I see that in these statues coming down. I see the possibility for a more perfect union by Mississippi deciding to change its state flag from having the battle flag of the Confederacy and the Army of Northern Virginia on its flag to something else. You know, it's small steps, but they're important steps because this is the first domino effect of real societal change. You know, we may have the monuments that are built in stone. But the real monuments that need to change as well, that white people can certainly aid in that changing, is healthcare, school systems, the school-to-prison pipeline. All these issues that we hear about time in and time out, we all have ways in which we can influence and change it. And you don't have to be a descendant of someone grand or grandiose in history in order to do that. You can pick up the phone and call your local representative. You can write letters. You can engage in education and being honest about the story. And that's what's so important.
Reverend Robert W. Lee is the great-great-great-nephew of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, and Lucian Truscott is the sixth-generation great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.